Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 12, 2019. President Kiir tells Sudanese to live in peace.
The people you were calling enemies yesterday have told you and you have accepted them as your brothers and you are going to work with them together. This is what I'm telling you, that work with that spirit right away from here, and when you reach Khartoum, you maintain that spirit.
And the number of children suffering from malnutrition in South Sudan is increasing.
It is projected that an estimated 1.3 million children aged between 6 to 59 months will suffer from acute malnutrition. The highest burden of acute malnutrition is in Greater Upper Nile and Warab State.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese government and various armed opposition officials have signed a declaration of principles, and the two sides say they will hold peace talks in October. Sudanese government officials, the Sudan Revolutionary Front, an umbrella organization of rebel groups, and the SPLM North faction based in the Nuba Mountains, signed the documents yesterday as President Kiir presided over the talks. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
The government and the rebel groups agreed on the pre-negotiation principles, including a two-month period of wrapping up the talks and reaching for a final deal. The two documents signed yesterday lay out confidence and trust-building measures the armed groups and the government should undertake ahead of the peace talks. President Kiir said the Sudanese people have suffered for far long, and the country's leaders must work for peace.
The people you were calling enemies yesterday have told you and you have accepted them as your brothers and you are going to work with them together. This is what I'm telling you, that work with that spirit right away from here, and when you reach Khartoum, you maintain that spirit.
A member of the Sudan Sovereign Council, General Mohamed Hamdan Dogolo, also known as Himeti, says the government will work with the armed groups to restore stability in the country.
We are now partners in peace and no longer parties. We are serious, faithful, and sincere in resolving the root causes of conflict in Sudan. I want to confirm to all our Sudanese people that the era of war, killing, and injustice is over.
Dagalo thanked President Kiir for bringing the parties together in Juba. Yasir Arman, deputy chairman of the SPLM North faction led by Malik Agar, who returned from exile to Sudan and was kicked out of Khartoum by the military council during the protests, says the documents lay a foundation to establish committees to address the cessation of hostilities and permanent ceasefire.
We are determined to end war, and we are determined to have democracy and war and peace together. That is very important for our people. We are determined to let millions of IDPs and refugees to go to their original areas. We cannot make them minister, but we can give them a new environment that will end the war, that will take them to their original places, and we resume building a new society.
General Abdulaziz Adam Al-Hilu, the leader of the SPLM North, who signed on behalf of the party, called the Declaration of Principles historic.
We spent 8 years, including 22 series of negotiations in Addis Ababa, but we could not get any fruit. Now, we are optimistic that this new beginning would lead us to reach a permanent peace agreement, which Sudanese people are longing for.
El Hadi Idris signed on behalf of the Sudan Revolutionary Front. Idris says Sudan is already experiencing change. He appealed to the international community to support the peace process.
The change that took place in Sudan is real, and we saw that spirit with a team that led by General Hamdan Dogolo. And within 2 or 3 days, we achieve this milestone.
The working committee are expecting to begin meetings immediately ahead of the next month's peace talks. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Still in Juba, the government and three UN agencies in South Sudan say the number of malnourished children across the country has reached a critical level. More than a million children between ages of 6 months and 5 years suffer from acute malnutrition, according to UNICEF, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and the World Food Programme. That number is much higher than the 860,000 acutely malnourished children reported just 3 months earlier. Lasoba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
Thirty-six-year-old Amjuma William cradles Blessing Emmanuel, her crying two-year-old boy, as she waits to see a doctor at Juba's Nyakron Primary Health Care Center, located next to the bustling customs market. Speaking in Arabic, William says she came to the health center about 3 kilometers from her home in Rajapayam after noticing her son's skin changing color.
Many people told me to take the child for medication, but I did not have money. The father to my children died. I am solely the one feeding them. I do not have anyone who can help me. I just brought the child because of treatment so that he gets well.
William returned to the Jondoru area about 2 weeks ago after attending her husband's funeral in Maridi. Speaking in Arabic, Manahil Ali, a nutritionist at the health center, says medical staff examined and weighed the child.
We observed his leg is swollen, and according to the mother, they came from a far place. The child's weight is even less. We will give him RTF. If he starts eating well, they will be scheduled to come to the center every week. But if he does not, we will refer him to the Al-Sabah Children's Hospital.
Health workers rely on RUTFs or ready-to-use therapeutic food to treat acutely malnourished children. Ali says Blessing Emmanuel will be on medication for 3 months, during which time he is expected to fully recover. He will be fed highly nutritional food supplements such as a plumpy nut to gain weight. The latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, report released on Wednesday indicates that, in spite of a slight improvement in overall food security since June, cases of acutely malnourished children in South Sudan are on the rise. John Mashek Akoff, deputy chairperson of the South Sudan National Bureau of Statistics, says this year's lean season recorded extremely high levels of acute malnutrition and requires urgent attention.
It is projected that an estimated 1.3 million children aged between 6 to 59 months will suffer from acute malnutrition. The highest burden of acute malnutrition is in Greater Upper Nile and Warab states.
The report attributes the rise in acute malnutrition to high levels of food insecurity, poor infant and young feeding practices, little access to clean water, and poor access to health and nutrition services during the rainy season. Mohamed Ayoya is a UNICEF country representative in South Sudan.
So just imagine the scale of number of children which are actually affected by this issue. Is the issue, as the chair said in his speech, around access to wash, around access to health facilities, but also around the fact that in this country we also have huge numbers of other diseases. Malaria is there, respiratory infections are there, and all this compound the effect of lack of access of food or access of food which is not of enough quality for the children.
Meshak Malo, the Food and Agriculture Organization representative in South Sudan, urges aid workers to redouble their efforts in the country. He says, above all else, South Sudan's leaders must restore peace so people can once again produce enough food to feed themselves.
With the peace process that has been in place, we are looking at a production, projected production of almost 800,000 metric tons. Peace process that had allowed people to go back to their farms. And FAO is working on having kits, seeds, vegetables, cereals that could be available to these populations.
The report says in spite of the slight improvement in food security situation since July, more than half of the South Sudanese population, or 6.35 million people, do not know where their next meal will come from. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
African nutrition experts are urging governments to address the growing problem of poor nutrition all over sub-Saharan Africa. Eugene Uyumana has details from Kigali.
Mukazirimo Bagabo Francine is a 27-year-old mother of three, and she is a fourth. All three of her children have started growth because of undernourishment. Francine says her husband abandoned her and she can't afford to properly feed them. She says, these children are still very little. To work for them alone is difficult for me. Their father has abandoned them. That's where my nutrition comes from. World Health Organization say the prevalence of stunting in Africa decreased from 38% in 2000 to 30% in 2007. However, the WHO says the number of people affected on the continent increased from about 51 million to 59 million because of population growth. Stunted growth is the result of chronic malnutrition, either from a shortage of food or from poor quality food. Aside from harming overall health, stunting hurts brain development and can lead to lifelong learning disabilities. Members of the Federation of African Nutrition Societies, who recently met in Kigali, say their first role is to educate Africans how to cook nutritious food. Dr. Christine Mukanhwari is the president of the Rwanda Nutritionist Society. Mukanhwari says they educate people not to only fill their plate. People have to know what to put on it. The food must contain all important food groups, be it vegetables, protein, fruits, grains. She says they recommend that pregnant mothers get adequate nutrition if they want to give birth to intellectuals for this continent. Ngozi Nam, the director of the Federation of African Nutrition Societies, FANUS, says nutrition is key to the continent's development. She and other experts are asking governments to invest in what they call village kitchens to make sure that the future of Africa is being properly fed.
It is important to note that nutrition is the key to achieving sustainable development goals. A country that does not give adequate attention to nutrition will never develop.
Village kitchens help parents learn the healthiest ways to cook locally grown produce. Community residents working with nutrition teachers share food and cooking techniques aimed at boosting child nutrition. While undernutrition in children is still a problem, some African countries have reduced the occurrence of stunting. For example, the Rwandan government says stunting in the country declined to 38% of children under 5 in 2015, down declined from 51% in 2010. In Ghana, stunting declined to 13% of young children in 2014 from 20 in 2008. In Kenya, it declined from 33% to 23% between 2008 and 2013. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are health officials doing to combat malaria in South Sudan? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
where do you turn for information about politics in your community?
If I'm to get any information about politics, there is normally a program on the radio, and that is CBS. They normally provide information about mainly the Ugandan politics. Then not only Ugandan politics, they also go on extra mile and deal with the foreign politics stuff.
Facebook, has come in, but has quicker information. Before they document in the newspapers, you will go to Facebook, you go to WhatsApp, you will already be knowing what is going around as politics is concerned.
I always go to the internet, cafes, and I always get the right information that I want from the cafe.
I normally read the dailies, or since now there's a lot of information on the internet as well, I go there and I check out what's happening every day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA. South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In the past decade, the world has seen significant advances towards eliminating malaria infection and death. But the World Health Organization says in some regions like South Sudan, malaria still poses health risks. Sheila Pony reports for VOA from Juba.
In South Sudan, mosquito-borne malaria is the leading cause of sickness and death in children under 5 years old. Program Director for National Malaria Control Program, Harriet Akelo Pasquale, monitors the number of infections across the country.
This year, so far, we have seen that a number of counties have reported an increase above the normal of what they used to report in the past years. So from our weekly reports, 25 counties have been identified to report increase in malaria cases compared to the previous years.
As South Sudan enters the peak of this year's rainy season, the sound of their children crying from anti-malarian injections is something that mothers such as Faida Shamima are living through, but struggle to understand. Her daughter is only 9 months old.
I brought her to the hospital. Her body was weak. She was vomiting and having diarrhea, and I was told she has malaria. I really don't know what to do about this malaria. Even after treatment, it keeps coming back.
Pasquale says that the patient overload can overwhelm medical workers.
Annually, we see about 4 million cases reported from the health facility mainly.
Dr. Morbe Taban, the medical director at Al Shaba Hospital for Children, added 7 of every 10 cases they treat at the only children's hospital in South Sudan are malaria related.
We have 12 to 14 medical doctors in the hospital, and I think we're now receiving 3 times more than our capacities. So we need more doctors, we need more human resource.
This year, heavy rain and poor infrastructure, filled swamps, flooded streets and overloaded channels creating ideal breathing conditions for mosquitoes. Sue O'Connor is the director of communication for MedAir. They provide medicine, treatment and treated mosquito nets to many rural parts of the country where malaria is on the rise.
So in our clinics, which we operate in a wheel, rank and lair, we are noticing an increase of cases in all of those locations, particularly in a wheel county. For instance, we had 797 cases reported in August of 2018. This year, August 2019, we had 1,300 cases. So it has increased this year over last year.
However, experts remain positive. They say with enough resources, commitment and political will, malaria-related illness and death can be reduced in South Sudan and perhaps even eliminated. Sheila Oponi for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
Zimbabweans are paying their respect as the body of former President Robert Mugabe lies in state at the Harare Stadium and flags whip at half staff across the nation he ruled for 37 years. The city has been quiet as Zimbabweans reflect on the legacy of the long-time ruler, whom some viewed as an evil, murderous dictator, while others view him as a revolutionary hero who stood up against colonialism. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Harare.
As Mugabe's body was transported by helicopter to the main sports stadium Thursday afternoon for public viewing, the facility was far short of its 45,000-person capacity. Many Zimbabweans, many of them out of work, told VOA they wouldn't go to pay their respects to Mugabe, who died last week at the age of 95. He was the first president of independent Zimbabwe, and until he resigned under pressure in 2017, he was the only leader the nation had known. In the heart of Harare, feelings are deep and mixed. 28-year-old Kelvin Sambana, who describes himself as a hustler, says he has no plans to pay his respects.
Why? Because Mugabe ruined our life, ruined our future. I am an educated person, as you can see. I have a degree, but I'm here selling cell phones, changing money, doing nothing. So why should I go to that funeral? He ruined my life. I can celebrate, yeah, that he's dead and gone. Gone forever. That's what can I be happy.
But things have changed. Under Mugabe, it was illegal to insult the president. Not that Ignatius Nyamunga, an unemployed 35-year-old who comes from the same rural village as Mugabe, would ever do that, he says. Nyamunga says he won't go to a memorial service in Harare on Sunday, but he will go home for the Sunday burial.
What the saying of saying, Afanaka, if anybody dies, he's now a good person. You can't talk anything bad about that someone. That's the thing. So regardless of the fact of his evil deeds, whoever is dead, whatever he did wrong, he's always good. He's now a good person. God receive him with open arms and stuff.
Mugabe is viewed by many as the man who liberated Zimbabwe from British rule in 1980. Many also view him as the man who drove the economy of this once prosperous nation into the ground. Teacher Judith Makuta, who is 55, says her feelings about the man are far less complicated. She says she will probably go to the memorial service at the stadium on Saturday.
I was in bed. It's unfortunate things were bad. He was a hero because he liberated us. So he was a hero.
And still others say they are ambivalent, like the 35-year-old comedian who asked us to refer to him by his stage name, the comic pastor.
We don't feel anything because I know why. Why should we cry? We are unemployed. 2008, people were being beaten on our face. So why should you cry? There's no reason for us to cry.
Instead, he invited Zimbabweans to do the opposite.
My best Mugabe joke is wherever we had elections, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission would start by announcing results from the urban areas. They'll start like Harare Central Constituency, Tsvangirai Morgan Richard, MDC, 6,812 votes, Mugabe Robert ZANU-PF, zero. Then would go and go in all urban areas. Then at last they would go to Uzumba Maramba Fungwe Constituency, Mugabe Robert Gabriel, 1,831,931.
But 34-year-old Tiko Kambara, who also calls himself a hustler, says the 1.5 million residents of Harare are more sentimental than they let on. He says they miss the man they called here by his clan name, Gashungu.
I've got a video which I took yesterday when people thought the body was going to his house. In less than 2 minutes, well, the road was full of people cheering, Gashungu, Gashungu, Gashungu. Less than 2 minutes, the road was full of people. So I can't say the people in Harare didn't like him. When he's going to be buried in his rural area, there will be thousands of people, I promise you.
That burial is planned for Sunday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
A series of attacks that erupted in South Africa have faded in the past few days, but there are fears that the violence threatens intra-Africa trade. A sharp drop in truck traffic between Zimbabwe and South Africa may be the first sign of that risk. As Adigondo reports, foreigners and foreign-owned businesses were attacked in several locations in South Africa, and people in several countries launched reprisal attacks on South African businesses.
South African police say more than 700 people have been arrested for a range of crimes, from vandalism to murder during this month's outbreak of what appears to be anti-foreigner violence. Business people around the continent are beginning to worry the violence could damage African trade. The South African research organization Trade Law Center says the country exported US$25 billion worth of goods to the rest of Africa last year and imported goods valued at $11.5 billion. Yet, Human Rights Watch says close to 200 foreigners, most of them truck drivers, have been killed in South Africa since March 2018 in what appears to be xenophobic attacks. Stanley Muluka is the president of the Southern Africa Development Corporation, SADC, Cross Border Truckers Association.
The violence in South Africa has greatly, you know, affected our business negatively. Our trucks cannot go into South Africa and pick up loads. Neither can they even go to offload for fear of being attacked by these people who are perpetrating violence. Therefore, our business has been negatively affected. The transport sector is the backbone of the economies, and therefore an attack on the transport sector is an attack on the economy of the region.
Zimbabwe revenue authorities indicate the number of people crossing into South Africa plunged 76% last week as the attacks ramped up to about 9,400. The week before, almost 40,000 people headed to South Africa. Over the same period, the number of trucks going to South Africa fell by 25% to just over 1,900, down from 2,500. The number of trucks coming from South Africa fell by a third to 1,455 from 2,155. The violence has caused a rift between South Africa and Nigeria, which summoned Pretoria's ambassador. Abuja also arranged for more than 600 Nigerians to be repatriated. Nigerian National Bureau of Statistics figures show that South Africa is one of Nigeria's top five export destinations. Nigeria economic analyst and journalist Mike Odelahunter says the economic ties between the two nations are extensive.
There are over 120 South African companies in Nigeria. Now, top of this is the MTN. The MTN is the sixth or seventh largest telecommunication network in Africa. The MTN has about 233 million subscribers. Now, Nigeria alone has over 63 million subscribers in Africa. MTN Nigeria is 73% owned by South Africa. 90% of the revenue that MTN Nigeria is making goes back to its parent body in South Africa.
According to the Trade Law Center, in 2016, South Africa exported goods worth just above US $438 million to Nigeria. It imported more than US $2 billion from Nigeria, chiefly crude oil. Odelahunter thinks the current dispute does not augur well for business relations. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Mara Tabed by Emi J. Yore.
Family is a secret thing, you know. Then we get back in our super style. Of course, talking about Maratabe. Maratabe, oh,
oh.
Yeah, Maratabe.
Mabidoro, Doria, Sambala, yeah, yeah.
Maratabe. Binum, Vida Vinci, and Bukra Binum, Victoris Hotel, Fiambio.
You've been listening to Emmy J. Yore with the song Mara Tabet. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.